That's good, Joe.
Thank you, Jane. And thanks again to everyone else that's read, helped us open the meeting. I'll take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Warm welcome to any visitors, and a huge welcome to any newcomers that might be with us tonight. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. And with that, it falls to me to introduce our speaker this evening. And it's this is a real pleasure, actually. This is a chap, a person, a man, whatever. Used to come to our meetings a few years ago as a fairly regular member when we were on Skype. And I can't lie and say I remember a huge amount of his story. So I'm really looking forward to hearing him share tonight. He's started coming back to our meetings, and it's lovely to see him. And he's going to share with us for 40 or 45 minutes his experience, strength and hope, his journey to, through and into Narcotics Anonymous. I hope he's going to kind of fill us in a little bit about where his recovery and his life have been over the last few years. So with that, I'm going to introduce you to Mohammed, who's going to share for us tonight. So Mohammed, the floor is yours. Please share with us.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, I'm Mohammed and I'm an addict.
Hi, Mohammed.
Hi, Mohammed.
Hey, Mohammed.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Steve, for the beautiful introduction. It's a real pleasure and a privilege to be sharing tonight, to be a speaker. And honestly, it's my first time to be a speaker. I've been asked before in a physical meeting, face-to-face meeting. But it just didn't. It didn't happen. I didn't refuse, but it just didn't happen for whatever reason. So I'm a bit nervous, to be honest. I'm nervous since 45 minutes ago. I'm very nervous, and my heart is beating. And I even checked my heartbeat rate, and it was very high. It just made it worse to know. Yeah, but I guess it's my defects, just praying is the only solution at these times. What can I say about myself? I'm about 38 years old. I'm from Cairo, Egypt, and I have two brothers, younger than me, and my parents are there in my life. Until I was like 10 years old, and my father actually and my mother were in Kuwait. That's in the Gulf. That's a Gulf country. And my father was actually working over there, and my mother, as I remember, she was a housewife. And when I was 10 years old, my father just made the decision to send me back to Egypt, where I lived with my grandmother and the other kids, cousins, lots of cousins was over there in the same building. Few uncles in the same building and aunts and all the kids around my generation, you know. And my childhood was, it was very crowded among the kids. Since I was 10 years old, I think, I felt like, I'm much more quiet than others. But I don't think I was aware about, you know, about this really, at that time. And what I remember, that I felt lonely, most of the time. And, when I started to be like 12 and 13 years old, I started smoking cigarettes. And of course, I was, trying to hide it, so I won't be smelled by one of my aunts or something. And then when they figured out that I'm doing so, they made a call to my father, and my father just brought me back to where he is in Kuwait. And I spent my high school over there. You know, but feeling lonely just became more intense from 10 to 13 years old. Even in the school with my classmates, everybody was expressing himself more easily. And it was very difficult for me to express myself. And it was very difficult for me to feel that I'm part of and I belong. You know, and in high school, in Kuwait, when I joined school in Kuwait, I found out that, you know, that I don't want to sit in the front seats as I used to in school in Egypt. I felt like the kids are sitting in the front seats, you know, are the nerds, you know, are the ones who are, they don't have character. This is how I have seen it, how I perceived it at that time. And the cool guys are the ones who are in the back seats, you know, at the end of the class, and the ones who are, you know, being silly, you know, making jokes, you know, on the teacher, you know, can express themselves, you know, to beyond the limits. So I have been that guy, and I had lots of attention. And that was new to me. It was very different feeling than the earlier years. I didn't feel that lonely, you know, at these moments. I had so many attention at school, you know, and even, you know, yeah, I was enjoying it because it was much different. Yeah, I remember one day, you know, I had we were playing soccer in the PE class and the schoolyard, and you know, I was I've been tackled, and you know, I fell, and I got very angry. I got a bruise, and I got very angry, and I had a fight with that guy in the changing room at the end of the PE class, you know, and I punched him in the face. And actually, at that time, I had so many acne in my face, you know, that it can bleed easily. It was horrible. And it was causing me actually lots of inconfidence and you know, psychologically, I wasn't accepting it. I felt very ugly because of this acne. And it's never been treated completely. But anyhow, my face was full of blood, you know, because of the acne I had. And I haven't been hit by the guy. I'm the one who punched the guy in the face, and everybody just said, whoa, and lots of crowd. And I was like a hero. I felt like I'm Superman at that moment. And we went to the school principal, and she asked for my parent, you know. My father was picking me up, so he came inside, and the other guy's father came inside, and the guy was actually crying, and it was huge in comparison to my body, you know. So I felt very great at that moment. And I'd been seen by many, many kids, other kids. And I got suspended. I don't remember if it was for one day or 3 days. And I was happy about it. Even my father had some kind of disturbance. It didn't give me a hard time for it, you know. I remember my father one day when in the graduation party for high school, there was a photo. I was showing it to him for the graduation party, and I was standing alone in the group in these photos without a partner, you know. And other guys were standing with their girls, and he had been criticizing me, why you don't have a girlfriend, you know. And that was very painful, because at this time in the teenage period, you know, I was always, you know, feeling that, you know, what's missing is a girlfriend in my life. I still feel not that special. So there was always something that's uncomfortable, My teenage period at this high school, I'll try to finish this period real quick because I took, my father was fighting with my mother a lot, and so much humiliation in that fights. And I remember one time he gave her a black eye, and bruises many other times, hitting her with a stick, And that happened a lot. It's not just one or two times. And I wasn't happy, staying with him. So when I graduated from high school, I was looking forward to get back to Egypt, to get in university in Egypt, because college in Kuwait wasn't fit for me. It wasn't good enough, and the good ones are very expensive, so I had to go back to Egypt. And somehow I stayed with an uncle and grandfather, for a year and the other year. But the thing is that I was very happy. It was a very toxic environment for me. And there was so many troubles between me and my father at this period. I've been tied in a chair, one time to be forced to study. So it wasn't really a good time for me. And I was looking forward, actually, I was thinking about drugs and alcohol. And I was waiting the moment to get back to Egypt. So I want to try drugs and alcohol because that was hard to get in Kuwait. But I had my first drink in that graduation party, but I didn't feel anything. When I came to Egypt, I stayed with my grandfather and my grandmother from my mother's side, and I joined university, and I was rushing for trying, pot and smoking weed and hash and drinking beer and alcohol. And I was really, I was happy about it. And I want to make sure that, I can get whenever I want. I remember first time I scored hash, I made sure that to take the number of the dealer from the guy who scored for me, because I want to do it myself. I want to get it whenever I want to. I was a starter, but I didn't feel like it didn't seem like I was using like a starter. I was hardcore since the beginning. I was a hardcore user since the beginning. So I was stoned all the time. I was drinking all the time. And then I came to these pills and different kind of pills and parties and all that. And all that seemed fun. And there was no much trouble and nobody know anything about it. The second year of university, they started to tell my father, I'm coming back late. And they probably told him that, I'm not sober, I'm high or something. And nobody wanted to have me at his house. So I stayed alone the third year, and the fourth year, mom came to me. And at that time, I started to use heroin. It seemed like it became my drug of choice. And I think that was the ending of the happy time of my using. I was on the hook. I was at that time not living to use, not using to live. Yeah, not living to use. I was in the using to live. It was like a big nightmare, but I didn't recognize it the first year or the second year. I thought it's still fun, but it wasn't fun, and there was withdrawal symptoms when I didn't have money. I never imagined that I would inject myself to get high. I disgraced, and I said it to a friend before, I will never inject myself to get high, and I did it. I even stole my mom's jewelry several times, lots of them, to sell it and the drugs. I want to, you know, to, yeah, I, you know, I tried to stop alone, and it was impossible. I tried to control. It was impossible. And you know, I didn't want to control it because I wanted to stop using. I wanted to control it so I can afford buying drugs without making trouble, because I feared, you know, that I would be without drugs, you know, out of drugs. And I didn't have the courage to declare war on the street, you know. So I was stealing from my mom. I was stealing from homes that I get into, my aunt's home, whatever I can get my hands over. But I was very afraid to do that outside, you know, because I knew I would get myself in trouble. I did it one time and I was caught, and you know, I never did it again. And at that time, my mom somehow encouraged me to telling me if there is something, if I need help in something. And everybody knew that, you know, I'm doing drugs. They didn't know what exactly I'm doing. And I confessed, you know, I wanted help. And that was, I think, at the end of 2007. And yeah, so I had a psychiatrist who was coming to home, and he was sitting with me for 30 minutes and giving me some medications and to pass through the withdrawal symptoms. And then after the 3 days of the withdrawal symptoms, the hard ones, I go back and use. And till, you know, after a few months, my mother told me, what about getting into going to a hospital? And I said, yes, why not? And I went, and I finished my, yeah, the detox, you know, I finished it, and you know, this period detoxing, and then a recovery house. And at that time, I attended in 2008, February 2008, my first NA meeting. It was unbelievable, you know. The room was about 60 people. They all seemed, you know, looking healthy, you know, cheeks, you know, guys, you know, full of flesh, different ages, elder people. You know, they look like normal guys in the streets, you know, just like normal guys in the streets. And they are claiming that they are addicts. And I started to listen to their assurance and started to recognize that, oh, these are addicts. They have passed through the things that I've been through. And it just, you know, it was a big surprise for me. But here's the thing is that, you know, I didn't stick to the, you know, listen to the similarities. I started to compare myself to their addiction, my addiction to their addiction. And their addiction, you know, I don't know, the some sharings been focusing on the bad things that, you know, that they had to do in order to survive and use and practice their active addiction, you know, successfully, and manage to get more drugs and not be out of drugs. You know, wars on the streets, you know, stuff, you know, bad things, you know, stealing from, you know, strangers in the streets, you know, doing bad things, you know. And I wasn't that person, and I felt like, oh, I'm not that bad, you know. Oh, okay, maybe, but it's not, you know, it's not me. Maybe, oh yeah, I'm not that bad. And you know, step one didn't really function with me. I had a sponsor. I was in the recovery house. They told me you need to get a sponsor. I talked to some guy, I don't remember, and it was my sponsor, and I read the step, and we used to discuss it, and I used to share with others after the meetings as he's telling me, but I wasn't really, I didn't surrender. I reached the rock bottom, but and well, I had a hard time, desperation, but I think I didn't reach the rock bottom, mentally, or I don't know. I had the reservations. Well, the thing is that I remember that I jumped. It was in the first floor. I jumped from the first floor in the recovery house I was in, and somehow I remember that I owe somebody amount of money. I went with a slipper, with no phone, with nothing. And I had this thought of using, and I just followed, and I climbed over the sewage pipe outside the building, and I ran, and took a taxi, and I went to that. I don't remember who I owed money to. He owed money to me, and I met the guy somehow that I don't remember how, and I took my money, and I went to the desert on the highway to score drugs, and I did so. And I was sleeping over the station at 4 o'clock in the morning. I got drugs, and I didn't know where to go, because I know that if I went back home to my mom's place, I would be sent to the hospital by force. This is what I used to hear, that they do to some addicts. It's illegal, but it can be done at dawn or after midnight, late after midnight. This is how it's done here. And actually, I went to one of my aunts at 5 o'clock in the morning. I knocked, and she let me in, and I asked to sleep over the night over her place, and she said, why not? And I think after a while, I found two guys from the hospital just taking me by force, sending me back to the hospital. So I did it again, another cycle. And the thing is that the other time, I still, hear its similarity. But, I didn't do the bad stuff that I did, as they had been sharing, And actually, at that other time, I stayed clean for 6 months, 4 or 5 months, with the help of the hospital and recovery house. And then I was waived from the place. And I thought about changing my geographical place, and I went to the States in 2009. It was a visit to my uncle over there in California, and my father was in my company. He traveled with me, and after 3 weeks, he went back to Egypt. I stayed over there for about 4.5 months. I relapsed again by alcohol, and I chose to go to New York City, where there's another uncle who's much younger, and he's doing drugs on alcohol. And I stayed over this place, and I was a tourist visa, so I worked under the table, and I came to get my drugs, and my drug of choice again. And I remember that I stole a guy. Big amount of money from a guy, from a delivery boy, and it seems like it was a saving for some long period. It wasn't short, and we were living in the same apartment because I left that other uncle, and I lived with that other guy who I, for 3 days, and I knew where he's hiding his money that he's collecting by making tips. And I think it was for a long period, because it was not a small amount of money. And yeah, I bought lots of drugs,
And I called my father to send me a plane ticket. I have relapsed again, and it was a scandal, because I knew that guy, that delivery boy, that roommate, from connections with my uncle who is in California, and there was a confrontation. I came to confront the guy in the street, and he told me, if you didn't steal the money from him, you didn't take that money, and he's claiming that you took it because he's trying to take advantage of you. This is what I said. I'm a guy who's from he's trying to take advantage of me. I'm from a good family. I wear good, nice clothes. I'm not like him. He's an illiterate guy. He doesn't even speak English, and he had been in America for 3 years, and he's working as a delivery guy. So yeah, he's trying to take advantage of me. This is what I said, and I confronted the guy in the street, and actually, I ran away with it. I told him that I owe you nothing. But everybody knew about it. Everybody knew that they took the money. I even told my mother later, because she pushed it to know that. When I came back to Egypt, I tried to get clean again, and it was through NA. It's always through NA, and I did different periods of times, 9 months. Year and quarter, then relapsing, and then year and 9 months, and relapsing, and the last one was 2 years and a half, and then I relapsed again. And I didn't know actually what is it, this reservation that I'm different than other guys, and their addiction was over. Because when I came back to Egypt, I from the States, from this short visit, I thought about being a drug dealer, and I failed many times. But just the thought came back again, and I thought it might work, and I was pushing that it would work so I can cover my using, making much money to cover my using, and make sure that I won't be out of drugs. And I was caught, and I've been jailed for 6 months. And it was very humiliating. It was very different period of time in my life. And I came out of it and tried to stay clean for 2 years and a half, and then I relapsed again. And the problem is that I wasn't aware of at that time is that I worked with a sponsor in these 2 years and a half. Because I had recovery at that period, I came to get to know what does it really mean with step one. What does it mean that I have no power over my addiction and that my life is unmanageable? Through this guy, where I worked the steps with, he came to tell me, he came to he was giving me lots of his time, lots of his effort. As if I'm a child, and I need patience and I need effort. He's actually giving that time and effort when I was asking for it, when I was asking for help. He wasn't carrying me, but at the same time, when he had the time, he was giving it to me. So there was so much that I have sensed and felt the. And he came to explain it to me, and this was the first realization of step one to me, the truth about it, is that, he told me, Muhammad, we actually, you can consider yourself that you're not only one individual. Consider yourself that you are two individuals. There's a one whose voice is much louder, and it seems stronger. It seems stronger. And that guy will be asking you to actually cross the red lines. And the red lines is lines that you put for yourself. And crossing these red lines, you will end up by using, because your addiction, when it actually manages your life, and it is the force that's running your life, when you are in a certain obsession or compulsion that it doesn't relate it to drugs in any manner, actually, when you are on that hook, even if you are clean, when you are on that hook, sooner or later, your addiction will switch that obsession, that compulsion with drugs, and you have nothing to do about it. You know, you have no tools to use because you have dropped the tools already for some period of time. So you will accept, and even if you are not liking it, against your will, just like the literature have told us. And it seemed like it actually made sense, you know. So he told me that I don't have to panic. And that was a new realization for me, because whenever I get this thought suffusing while I have been clean at these times, I used to panic. I used to be horrified, you know, because I didn't think that I can actually not do it, you know. It was very intense, and I was entangled emotionally with the thought of using whatever other obsession or compulsion that I'm getting. That mainly at these times was sex, and still till now it sometimes comes in the sex form or even in money. The thing is that I managed to work step one with him and live it and stay clean for 2 years and a half and work the other steps too. But I didn't, how much long do I have, if I may ask, so I can be able to, I don't want to.
10, 15 know. Minutes, Mohammed, no problem.
Okay, I'll try to wrap it up. Yeah, thank you. Actually, after, I think I shared that before, that I was, in these 2 years and a half, I had a sponsor. I have been living the steps. I came to grasp what step one is about, and I was struggling still in the other steps. And I remember a sentence that I still remember, that in step two, in this, I think in the how it works, you know, how and why. I remember a sentence that says, it's a tremendous struggle to stop relying on our reasoning and ask for help. And it seemed like it's very true, you know, to actually ask for help, not just do as my sponsor is telling me to do. And I had that kind of sponsor who was different than the previous sponsors. Previous sponsor used to tell me stuff like, you know, okay, share the principle of honesty with five guys after the meeting. Share what his reservation means with five guys or three guys, and stuff like that, you know. And I did that, and it never worked for some reason. But this guy didn't actually guide me the same way, who's much more simpler than the previous sponsors. Asking for help was very different, was very difficult, and I was told to do service, and I did service in the translation committee in Egypt, and I was a secretary of my home group. That was like about 10 years ago, and I remember I came out of a meeting and I was struggling with obsessions and compulsions and mainly sex, and I was again not working my program because step one alone wasn't enough, and I believe I was 2 years and a half clean using step one, and being in the meetings regularly, and that's it, you know, that's it, and trying to be present in service, and that's it. I'm not really dealing with what's happening inside. I'm reading the steps, you know, but, you know, that was it. I was ungrateful. I remember, how was it before I relapsed? I was ungrateful for about 3 weeks. I felt very angry when I heard someone sharing in the meeting that he's grateful and stuff like that, but I didn't feel any gratitude. And sooner I relapsed, and I even, you know, I just told myself, this program is just working for you. It's not working for me. And I called a guy before going ahead and using it. And I told him, as if I'm doing my part and I'm proving to myself that this program doesn't work for me. Here I am calling a guy, telling him that I'm about to use now after 2 years in clean, 2 years being clean. And, you know, it's not working. Whatever he's telling me, you know, it's not making any difference. And I went ahead and I used. And that's how cunning it was with me. I came to get clean again. At that time, I was newly married, and my wife was pregnant. And after period for relapsing, and I relapsed, even though that my life was different. I had a beautiful wife that I love, and she's pregnant. She got a kid. She got a baby inside her, Billy. That's my own. And you know, I had a job, I had people's respect, but I didn't have recovery. Step one wasn't enough. This time, being clean, I'm going to celebrate my 5 years clean on the 14th of March. It was a long period, you know. Different things happened in this period. I think I have experienced the most difficult situations clean, and I didn't use because I asked for help. Step two worked with me because I actually wanted to help myself. I had enough of it, you know. And having enough of it, you know, with the awareness, was enough for me to actually work the rest of the steps. After step two, step three, you know. I remember a guy after 2 years and a half and relapsing that I met, and used to be using drugs with me, and he told me something after the meeting that I came to, saying that, you know, I'm back from a relapse and collecting my white chip. And he told me, Muhammad, you know, you need to hang in there and try to stay clean till you work step six and step seven. Because when you work these steps, you will know why you get back to using, why you get back to relapsing. And I'm grateful that I heard something like that. And I believed him, you know. Every time I came back to the meeting rooms, I came back to the meeting rooms because I believed, you know, I believed in the program. Didn't believe that would work with me, but I believed in the program, and I believed that these guys who are working, who are attending these meetings, are just the same like me. And I had faith in others, you know, before even building my own faith, because the guys are the same, you know. Of course, there were some people that have relapsed, but there were certain people who have been always there all this long. And And that what kept me coming back, relapse after relapse, relapse after relapse, you know, till I came to the point where I had enough of it. You know, I just had enough of it. It's not only I had enough of it using, I had enough of it living in my own disease, while I'm fleeing. And when I really worked the program and lived the principles in the steps, especially the first three steps, I came to be free from living in my own sickness and my own disease while I'm clean, not using. It was possible. And I came to enjoy, you know, myself more and have goals, you know, and appreciate what I have and look forward to build up. Step six and seven have helped me so much. To actually arrest my disease, arrest my sickness with the help of others, of course. I will try to wrap it up, you know, because my sponsor, my previous one, my current sponsor that I've been working with now is a different one, and he's a foreigner, is in the States, and I have never seen him, but we talk online. The previous one have told me, you know, before you get, you know, you be on the hook of any certain compulsion or obsession, what happened just right before it? What happened? How was your stream of thoughts? You know, what have you been thinking about? What have you been feeling and why, you know? And that took a different dimension when I worked step six and seven. It wasn't very meaningful to me. It took my attention when I heard him saying that, but it wasn't really very meaningful to me till I hanged in there, you know, till I came to work step six and seven and recognized my character defects. At that time, it made sense, you know. This disease came to be to me, you know, this is something real. It's not that some, you know, perception that we talk about in the meetings, as I used to somehow perceive it. And recovery is not such, you know, a thing that for hopeful, you know, silly people, as I used to perceive it at other times, that's, it won't be working with me. Oh, I'm grateful. Oh, thanks God. You know, no, it's a real thing. And it works. You know, I've been all over the place a bit in my sharing. I can share. I'm surprised that I shared that long. I thought that I wouldn't be able to share for 40 minutes or 45 minutes at the beginning of the meeting. It's a real privilege to be part of this group. I remember Steve since Earth Group on Skype. I think that was about 10 years ago. A great guy, Steve. Yeah, I was grateful for that group. It was very small, you know, but I needed to hear recovery from people outside Egypt too. I needed to know that the message is the same. I needed to hear the message in a different language, in its mother language, I would say. I was pleased to be coming across Earth Group and then Higna after Earth Group have moved. I think I came to attend Higna for a few months or a year, and then ending up with NA at Home, which is my home group, my virtual NA home group right now. And that's the only home group I have. I get so much from the people in my home group. I get so much from the consistency and the experience of those who are coming back day after day and day after day and doing service, you know, and have a stand on things. I learn from these people who have stands on things. Yeah, I'm grateful, you know, that that there is a solution to this problem. I'll never be able to express, you know, my gratitude to my higher power that I came across this problem, this solution, that I had a chance to live again and try it again several times. You know, because there was many people have been dying of this disease, And they have been given chances, you know, through NA, but they chose to go out again and die, you know. And there are others who I never hear the message. Several have been very close to me, and yeah, I'm grateful to be clean today. It's yeah, I hope that I I hope that you know, I made sense with my speaker, me being a speaker for the first time. And I'm sorry that I took even longer than I should have took from the meeting. Thank you all for listening to me. Thank you all for being part of my recovery. Thank you for working your own program and teaching me how to work mine. And I will leave it here. Thank you. Thank you.